Recording in progress. Okay. So it's a confluence of all the things that are showing up in this moment, your distractions, my distractions, the teachings, this moment, the light, how the earth is tilted, the seasons. And it's never to be repeated again, and it's never happened before. So in some ways, you could say we're serving the moment and meeting the moment in this talk, whether you're talking or listening. We're serving the moment, we're meeting the moment. And that's why I chose the mantra for us. It's from Sylvia Boorstein. It's a brilliant teaching. It's the essence, I think, in some ways of the teachings. May I meet this moment fully, this moment and this moment, and may I meet it as a friend. So there's a kind of warmth. So we're meeting this moment together as we are together this evening for this talk and for this practice. There's a quote from John Powell. I'm going to quote him a couple times tonight. He said, "If you knew me yesterday, please do not think that it is the same person that you are meeting today." Right? We're all a river, a flow. If you knew me yesterday, please do not think that it is the same person that you are meeting today. So you're welcome to contact me afterwards. If you have any questions, you can send me an email. That's fine. I'm also interested in maybe you could talk to each other. I think I know some of you are friends with each other outside of this group. So really reach out to each other. Have that refuge of Sangha. And then, okay, so our topic, our actual topic for tonight is bodhicitta. 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 Bodhicitta is a fancy word, which means the aspiration or wholesome desire to attain awakening. So it's the aspiration to attain awakening. It's a wholesome desire. We have this desire to attain awakening, not just for ourselves, but for the benefit of all beings. I was thinking about this today, and it came to me, the campsite rule. Do you know this rule? It's the golden rule of being in nature, of going camping, where you leave things in better condition than when you arrived. So can we leave the world in a better place than it was when we arrived? So this campsite rule. And then the question also is, what is your legacy? What would you like to leave? What would you like to leave? And I don't necessarily mean like money and property. I actually mean, what would you like to give to the world? What are you doing to leave the world a better place than when you arrived? So Mary Oliver said it so well, as she does, and I'm sure you've heard this quote before. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So we have bodhicitta, this wholesome aspiration to attain awakening for others. The word bodhi is a Sanskrit word. The word bodhi, it means awakened. So awakened. And chitta means mind, heart. So it's not just our thinking mind, and it's not just our emotions, but it's the mind, heart together. It's an awakened mind, heart, bodhicitta. It's essentially a path of love and compassion for others, for ourselves and for others. So when we start to develop or cultivate this bodhicitta, this aspiration to awaken for others, we're moving our spiritual practice away from another project of self-improvement or another consumption, another thing that we're consuming, like a movie or just other things, other products. We're moving our spiritual practice away from consumption and isolated individualistic improvements into what we can give. So we're moving away from, oh, I need more equanimity. I feel like I think this sometimes, I wish I just had a little more equanimity. People will tell me this actually quite often. Equanimity and patience. Oh, I just need to get a little more patience. I just need to get a little more equanimity. And that might be true, actually. You know, I'm a human. I could use some more patience. But in some ways, that idea of getting more from our spiritual practice is turning us towards our own self-preoccupation. And bodhicitta is asking us to turn away from that, to turn away from that, and what can we offer? Or sometimes we might do this, we might think, oh, I need to have a quieter meditation. That meditation wasn't quite good enough. I need to have a better meditation, right? Like this concern with our own preoccupations. And instead, we're asked with this aspiration to move towards offering compassion to ourselves and to each other, compassion to the moment. May I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend, and compassion to each other. It moves us away from what can I get to being seated more fully into the true nature of reality. So sometimes the Buddha was called, his title was, or people called him Tathagata. Maybe you've heard this word before. It's another Sanskrit or Pali word, Tathagata, which means one who goes deeply into the way things are. So bodhicitta is one who, the mind heart that is awakened. So what are we awakening from? We're awakening from holding our own territory and defending it. Have you been there? I've been there. We're awakening from a preoccupation with a small, powerless, and isolated sense of self. We're awakening from our preoccupation with our own needs, preferences, and desires. You know, we make the world really small when we ask it to always be pleasing to just myself. I was thinking this morning about how I have a student actually who's in New Zealand, and right now in California, where I live, we're moving into winter. It's fall into winter, and she's in New Zealand moving spring into summer. Like, there's so many people in the world. There's so many different people in the world having so many different experiences. So who am I to think that the world should go just the way I think it should, right? Like, that's a little bit of a misunderstanding, a little bit of some hubris. And then also, my husband and I, so we bought this property up in Northern California in Fort Bragg, and it's starting already, actually. It is a retreat center where people can come and do retreat. Mostly at this point, it's self-retreat or small retreats because of COVID. But we took it on. It's a big a project. There's a lot to be done. And I found from working with him, oh, we have to do the water system, or, oh, we need to, whatever project. There's so many projects all the time. It's like life. There's so many projects. And that his mind works so differently than mine. And it doesn't mean his mind is wrong. It's just different. So when we decide, when we have to talk about how to do a project, like, we both need to articulate, because sometimes I'll think, well, of course we would do it this way. I shouldn't even have to say it because it's so obvious. But it turns out it's not obvious that my way is not the only way, and that to someone else, their way might be quite just as obvious to them. So this bodhicitta is awakening us from that sense of my way is the only way, my way or the highway. That's saying. And then it's awakening us from our own sort of tunnel vision. So the other day I had to give a teaching. I have a program, a group of people that I've been practicing with for about 6 years now. And we do chunks. We'll do 6 months or 10 months of a program at a time. And we'll meet. This time we've met twice a month for 6 months. And the last meeting was a couple of weeks ago in the morning. And so I was a little nervous about the whole thing. Like, oh, okay, it's the last meeting. And what am I going to say? And what are we going to do? And I have to get up early and I have to prepare all this stuff. And there's a neighborhood cat. There's a cat that showed up in our little, it's not really quite a neighborhood where we live, in our woods, in our neck of the woods. Somebody left a cat here. And the neighbor, one of our neighbors has been feeding it, but he already has cats and they're fighting. And so we're trying to get this cat, this is a very long story, but anyway, we're trying to get this cat to come over so it can move away from his cat. And we need to feed it because it needs to eat and it's in the middle of the woods. And so I went over before I had to give this teaching. I went over to feed the cat. And then the next thing I know, the neighbor is like, oh, the cat, this cat, I call him Tiger. It's a very cute cat, Tiger, it's a kitten. Tiger had attacked his cats. He has four elderly cats. They're like 17-year-olds, and Tiger is probably a year old. And I had to let go of my preoccupation with, well, I have to teach in less than an hour and I haven't really finished preparing and I have this to do and I have that to do. And really, the moment, let me meet this moment fully, let me meet it as a friend. The moment required me to come and help with the cats because there was a brouhaha with the cats. You know, they yowl and they do the cat thing and the one cat was hungry, right? So I had to let go of my preoccupation with what I needed. And instead of thinking of it actually as being kind to Gary or the cats, it was just in the moment. Can I meet this moment that was arising? Could I meet it as a friend? And that's what needed to happen. And it was fine. And I helped the cats get separated and the older cats get into safety and the younger cat got food. And then I came and I went back and taught and it, guess what? It was just fine. It was all just fine. Right? So may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. And this bodhicitta, this aspiration to awaken for the benefit of all beings, includes the letting go of my self preoccupation so I can meet the moment, whatever's arising in front of me. So we are awakening from our own sense of a small, isolated self. And what are we awakening to? What are we awakening to? We're awakening to the truth of the way things are. We're open to the world that we're actually living in. We are awakening from the delusion or the dream that we are separate from everything else. We're awakening to the truth of impermanence. Things are changing all of the time. This moment, this Dharma talk, this time of year, the light, everything's changing. We're awakening to the truth of dukkha, our vulnerability. We're awakening to the fact that life has its challenges, that it's not your fault. And there's nothing wrong with you if things are hard for you. We all go through cycles, that there's this truth of dukkha. We're also awakening to the truth of not self, that there's not any separate little person that's you, that's actually separate from everything else. We're all actually deeply connected. We're awakening to a deep interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. So from Martin Luther King Jr., I'm giving you all the cliche quotes tonight, but they're so good. So Martin Luther King Jr. says this so well. He said, in a real sense, all of life is interrelated. All men, people, are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. So we're awakening to this deep interconnectedness. We could also define bodhicitta as those who work to develop the four qualities of the heart, the four divine abodes, loving kindness, compassion, joy for others, and equanimity. So maybe for you, maybe that's what you want to do with your one wild and precious life. Maybe that's your aspiration, to develop loving friendliness, a kind of love that's not limited, but it's unbounded. Or compassion, maybe your aspiration is to develop compassion. You know, there's goddess from the Tibetan tradition, actually from the Hindu tradition also, named Tara, Green Tara. There's Kuan Yin, you might have heard of Kuan Yin. And there, she's always depicted sitting, oh, you can't see how I'm sitting, but she's always depicted sitting half in meditation with one foot forward so she can leap up into action. She's dedicated herself to leaping into action when there's difficulty, when there's suffering. And maybe that inspires you. Maybe that's what you would like to leave as your legacy in this world, compassionate action, joy, and peacefulness. So again, from John Powell, he said, it is essential that our love be liberating. Isn't that beautiful? It is essential that our love be liberating, not possessive. We must at all times give those we love the freedom to be themselves. Love affirms the other as other. It's a beautiful sentiment of loving friendliness. It would also, it would not be possible to love others without loving your own self. So I'm not talking about bodhicitta as a kind of self-sacrifice or self-aggrandizement by being the nicest person. Oh, I saw the title from last week's talk was something about being nice versus, I can't remember. But anyway, I wish I had heard it. Maybe I'll listen to it. So bodhicitta is not about improving, like shining up your personality and becoming nicer, right? It's seeing, it's awakening to this deep interconnectedness to how what affects me affects you and what affects you affects me, and waking ourselves up into love for the benefit of all. So it's not a way to bolster our sense of self as the one who is good or self-sacrificing. It's not the same as cultural conditioning to be nice. It can be fierce. It can be strong. Bodhicitta can be fierce and strong. It could be soft and gentle. It depends on what's needed. So it's, again, back to that mantra, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. So meeting each moment, whatever's needed. Like when I went with the neighbor, instead of preparing for the talk, what was needed in the moment was taking care of the cats. So how can we serve the moment? Maybe that's your bodhicitta vow, that I vow to serve the moment, whatever is arising, to meet the moment. Elizabeth Mattis Namgyel. She's a Tibetan Buddhist teacher. I think she's an American woman. She's a white woman. But she wrote a book on faith. And in this book, she calls a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is a being. Sattva means being, and bodhi again is awakened. So bodhisattva is an awakened being. She says a bodhisattva is one who burns with love while knowing that the world itself is not something that can be resolved. Right? Everything's impermanent. Nothing can be resolved because everything's always flowing. But the bodhisattva anyway burns with love. So there are some Zen bodhisattva vows that we can learn about. Maybe some of you already know about them, and they're quite unresolvable. They're quite huge. But why not go for broke, right? Why not? Why not? You only get this one life. So here's one translation of a Zen bodhisattva vow. And people say this. People say this every day. Sentient beings, limitless in number, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The awakened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. So I love that. There's different translations. So sometimes sentient beings, limitless in number, I vow to ferry them over. And think about ferrying ourselves and ferrying each other over the floods of life. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. This is impossible. There's so many beings. But why not work for that? Not in a sort of you'll never get it done way, so be depressed, but in this sort of aspirational, this beautiful, wholesome desire. Delusions are inexhaustible. Are you familiar with that? Delusions are inexhaustible. Misapprehensions, we could call delusions as misapprehensions. They're inexhaustible, and I vow to end them. And then the first one that I read, reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. Sometimes this line is translated as Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. I feel like Dharma gates, Dharma means wisdom or the way things are or the teachings. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Right? What brought you to your practice? Was there some suffering that brought you there? That's a Dharma gate. What brought you to this Zoom group tonight? That was a Dharma gate, right? Every moment every moment there's a possibility of entering into the Dharma, into the way things are, to seat ourselves like the Tathagata, like the Buddha, in the way things are. So Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So we follow the Eightfold Path to wake up. So sometimes Bodhisattva is also talked about as one who practices the paramis. The paramis is a list of, in Theravadan tradition, 10 qualities that are the qualities of an awakened being. And maybe these qualities, I'll read them off in a second. Maybe these qualities are things that would inspire you. Maybe you would have your Dharma vow, your bodhicitta vow, be to develop one of these qualities. So generosity. We can think of these qualities, actually, as you hear them, you can notice how they're relational. They're all relational. So generosity. One who practices, a bodhisattva is one who practices generosity. Bodhisattva is one who practices ethics, ethical behavior. Oh, such a gift. When someone is ethical around me, I don't have to worry about them stealing from me. I don't have to worry about them lying to me, right? It's such a gift. It's a beautiful gift of safety. A bodhisattva is one who practices renunciation, of letting go. Letting go. In this context, I'm talking about perhaps letting go of your preoccupation with your narrow sense of preferences and needs. A bodhisattva is one who practices wisdom, discernment. What is leading us to more awakening? What's leading you towards awakening? What's leading you away from awakening? A bodhisattva is one who practices patience, Kanti, patience. It's a practice, not a perfect. A bodhisattva is one who practices truthfulness, satya, and a bodhisattva is one who practices resolve. You could even think of the bodhisattva vow itself as a kind of resolve, like I resolve to do this, and the power of that. A bodhisattva is one who practices loving kindness, and a bodhisattva is one who practices equanimity. So I have a little, it's long, but I'm going to read it to you because I think it's really beautiful. It's an excerpt from Shanti Deva's writing. Shanti Deva was an ancient sage, and he wrote something called The Way of the Bodhisattva. Again, Bodhisattva is the awakened being. And this translation is from the Dalai Lama. So if you'd like to listen, you could turn it into a little bit of a meditation if you were feeling that. And I'm going to read it to you. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. Those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill be quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power. and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay. And then my question for you is, what are your aspirations for your practice? It doesn't have to be till the end of your life. Remember, it's just this moment. In this moment, what are your aspirations for your practice? And you might, if you find something, just say it in your mind 3 times. May it be so. I'll bring your hands together and you'll take a small bow to finish. So I have homework for you. If you take the challenge, your homework is to write out your vow. Write it out. Put it on a little piece of paper. Put it on your altar. Post it on your bathroom mirror. Maybe you need it. Maybe the bathroom mirror is more important than the altar because it'll remind you as you go about your day. You can write your own bodhisattva, bodhicitta vow. So I'm wondering if there's any comments, questions. I'm so curious to hear from you all because I know there's a lot of wisdom in this room. And I think you could, I don't know, how do you do questions? Can somebody, you can just unmute yourself or you can raise your hand or just unmute yourself. But yeah, or raise your hand. No, there's nothing. Do you in this group ever get put into small groups to talk to each other? Is that what you do? Oh, we're going to do it. Uh-oh. I know how to do it. I'm the co-host. I can do it. I know how to do it. I'm a Zoom pro. So I'm going to put you in a little small groups and you're going to have maybe 6 or 7 minutes. I'm going to try and put you in groups of 3. Let me see how that goes. Oh, maybe I can't do it. I don't have a choice down here. Uh-oh. Linda, do you know how to do it? There's usually a choice in the bottom breakout rooms. Let's see it. Okay. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask somebody to be brave. Anybody be brave and share your vow, your aspiration. Yeah, Mary, go ahead.
So I would like to be more present for my life. I think that for me, that is the, I mean, it's like you talked about the paramis, and when I read the book by Ajahn Chisito, Crossing Life's Floods, the paramis. But what I realized is I need to be present. I need to be awake. I need to be knowing that I know. I need to be, you know, yeah. I mean, I need to be, you know, less automatic pilot, more moments of awareness. And I just really want to, like, you know, be checking in. I mean, there's a lot of things that spark that. And I have ways that I do that to spark, you know, like, you know, even washing the dishes. I was there washing the dishes today. And just like, you know, here you are at the sink. There's a window outside. Be here. You know, don't be washing the dishes and thinking about, I don't know, what, you know what I mean? It's just whatever else. It's like, whatever I'm doing, be present for it as best as I can. And I think that, you know, how can I make a vow, or how can I practice a parami, or how can I practice metta if I'm not even here? You know, and I think that's to me the for me, that's a real call to action. And
beautiful.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, beautiful. I love what you're saying. It's an aspiration to practice one of the Eightfold Path, which is wise mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Do what you're doing while you're doing it. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. And may it be so.
Thank you.
What else? Anybody else have an aspiration? Yeah, Jan, P, please go ahead. You can unmute yourself. I don't know if I can do that.
I wrote down that I need to continue to practice and not judge the practice. Not say, oh, that was a bad sit. I was giving my sits a name, and it's like short sit, uncomfortable sit, bad sit, good sit. And I noticed that last week I kind of stopped doing it, and it made it more agreeable that I didn't have to, at the end of the time, reflect on it and go, was that good or was that bad? No, it just was. So I think I heard Gil say something about this morning about meditation rolling along. And I think that's my aspiration, is to have meditation rolling along without me deciding if it was worthwhile or not. I think that's
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. May it be so. May it be so. Because the thing is, we don't always know. Like, we don't know. Like, the mind has ideas, but we just don't know, like, the outcome of. Anyway, it's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. May it be so. Who else? I want to hear at least one more, because it's so inspiring, actually. Go ahead. It's Linda. Go ahead.
So I wrote that, may I bring ease to everyone I come into contact with. Because I know I have at times been the cause of dis-ease with people I've come into contact with. And so I would just like to open my heart to them, see their suffering, and not add to it.
Beautiful. I hear so much compassion in that. Beautiful. May it be so. May it be so. Who else? Any brave souls? Sometimes saying it aloud, it's not like, if you say it aloud, it's not like you're going to fail if you forget tomorrow or in 2 minutes after the thing. Art, go ahead. Let's hear. I want to hear.
Yeah, when I think about meeting the moment, I think of like my intention or intentions. I do have kind of this aspiration for practice, but that's a little too, that's kind of more longer term, and it's a little more personal that I want to share. But in terms of meeting the moment, intending to meet the moment with kindness, intending not to cause harm through my actions, which are like the, I think the first two of the, I think they're like three wise intentions or right intentions. And then the, but my third one is being available to the Dhamma, being available to, being available to this moment as a moment of practice. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's the, like, that reminds me of the Zen vow. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Mm. Like this being. Mm. I love how I'm hearing the Eightfold Path from you all. I'm hearing the heart qualities, the Brahma Vihara heart qualities, like all the teachings show up in our aspirations. It's quite beautiful. Anybody else? We have time for one more.
Hi, Ashley, this is Bowman. It's dark where we are, so I haven't turned on the video.
Okay.
But my intention when I sit, my intention is to awaken and to live in the present moment and to meet all of my interactions with loving kindness. So it's echoing what everybody else is saying, but you know, that's, you know, whenever I sit, I repeat that intention to myself.
That's beautiful. Thank you for mentioning that. It's really helpful to, at the beginning of our practice, to say it, like, what are we doing? So then it's not about the good meditation or the bad meditation. It's about meeting the moment or whatever it is, whatever your aspiration is, or how you're meeting the moment with friendliness. Beautiful. Thank you, Bowman.